Welcome to today's segment of our Briefly Focused series, Managing and Thriving with Executive Dysfunction. I'm Belinda McCauley, Executive Director of the Beverly Hills Bar Association. I'm delighted to introduce today's speaker, Lindsay Paoli. Lindsay is the founder and mind performance coach at Fundamental Health, a company dedicated to delivering personalized, evidence-based training solutions for business leaders and entrepreneurs. With a master's degree in marriage and family therapy counseling and over 4 years of experience as a consultant coach, Lindsay brings a deep expertise in the intersection of mental health, neuroscience, and performance. Lindsay's mission is to redefine how we approach mental health, moving it from a reactive concept to a proactive lifestyle strategy. She believes that lasting success is built on the foundation of self-care, meaningful relationships, and optimized mental performance. Lindsay, we are so looking forward to learning from you today. The floor is yours.
Thank you so much. What a great introduction. I don't remember if I wrote that or not, but I'm so impressed. Thank you. Welcome to everybody else. I'm so excited to be here this morning. I've been planning for this for several weeks, and I'm so excited to finally be presenting this and give you what is hopefully for you a really both interactive and simple tool that you can find to be very integrative into your very busy lifestyle. So before we get started, I'm going to go ahead and open my screen here and start our slideshow. All right. So if you've never heard of executive dysfunction before, that's totally normal if you're not in the psychology field, but it's also one of the things that I see most impair my clients. And as Belinda mentioned, I only work with high performing clients, whether they are practitioners in law or medicine or other mental health areas, CPAs. So all of my clients have typical high performing personalities. And so when we get into understanding executive dysfunction and how detrimental it can be in small day-to-day doses, it's really important to kind of understand what executive function is. And then in today's training, we're going to be giving you tools to not only understand it, but then start to overcome it and improve in the areas where maybe you have some weaknesses that you didn't even know what to label before. So today we're going to be understanding what executive function is and why it matters specifically for you as legal professionals. There are 8 core executive functions, and we're going to go over each of them and do this in a really interactive way. So I encourage you to go ahead and use your resources. They just dropped it in our chat. Thank you. So that you can go ahead and follow along with the worksheet that we'll be doing. Teach you how to recognize how each function is going to show up in your legal profession and then assess your personal strengths and weaknesses in each of these different areas so that we can recognize what you need to be leaning more into and give you the tools to help you to be practicing and incorporating hopefully a lifestyle that is helping you to improve the functions that are maybe sneakily kind of undermining your day-to-day work. Everything that I do is always based in the field of neuroscience, which is not typical for most therapists, but it's just kind of a special interest of mine to understand a lot of how the brain operates in order to let it operate at its best. Next slide, please. Oh, I think I got it. Okay. Sorry, it says that I have access here. Okay, here we go. I have it. Thank you. All right, so my name is Lindsay Paoli. Since writing that bio, I have received my dual licensing with the state of Nevada. So I'm both licensed as a marriage and family therapist and a clinical professional counselor. And so that means that as a marriage and family therapist, we work systemically, understanding either the dynamics of families or coworkers or religion, just a lot of the social circles and constructs that help to develop a person's personality traits and strengths and weaknesses, and then helping them to uncover how they best operate in all of those dynamics. And then as a clinical professional counselor, kind of understanding just the specific aspects of mental health as it applies to people who are typically coming to therapy because they have a specific symptom that they're trying to overcome. Because I work mainly as a coach, I work only with, like I mentioned, high professional or high achieving professionals, whether they're business owners or leaders. So whether you're running your own firm or working for an agency or a firm, I work on both ends. And you also likely know that those are two very different ways of operating and thinking compared to like a typical 9-to-5er who's not in a professionally licensed field. Before becoming a therapist, I actually was a corporate leader and worked in Las Vegas, which is where I'm from, in the hospitality industry. So I worked for MGM Resorts. I helped open Vidara. I went to Wynn and Encore, Cosmopolitan, hopefully all some companies that you're all familiar with and have been to here in Las Vegas. And my specialty was in hotel operations, specifically in guest services. Now, if you've ever worked in guest services before, you know that it can be very, very intense. And so frankly, by the time I was 30 years old, I was exhausted and completely burnt out from the field. I was raised as a military child. And so there was a lot of black and white thinking, a lot of like emotions are unnecessary in becoming really good at what you want to do. Emotions were seen as really messy. And it wasn't until I was really burning out as a leader and a manager at 30 years old, who was trying to take care of all of my guests while also trying to take care of all of my team members, that I realized I had no idea how to take care of myself, much less handle all of these other people. And so it took several different visits to different therapists, but I did end up going to a therapist who was also an executive coach and realized there's a lot of optimization that I had been missing by avoiding going to therapy or personal development in general. And so it's something that I really wanted to lean into. And I dropped my entire hospitality career and went into grad school to become a therapist myself, opening my practice in 2019, right before COVID, when suddenly everybody was aware of the importance of mental health, both as individuals and in companies. And so now I work with companies and individuals to help see mental health as a strategy instead of a self-sabotager. So my segue into ADHD here is that I was diagnosed at 30 with ADHD, and I was in grad school at the time and completely disregarded it. I didn't believe that ADHD was a real thing. I certainly didn't believe that I had it. I was the top of my class. I was the top, I was climbing the corporate ladder really, really rapidly. I had a brother who was ADHD, and he operated very differently than me. And so the two of us weren't similar at all. I thought that the diagnosis was crazy. And so hopefully you've attended some of the other briefs about ADHD to understand a lot more about specifically the difference in diagnosis between men and women, and the difference in age in diagnosis between men and women. In women right now, I believe that the average diagnosis age is between ages 30 and 40, because there is such a difference in the way that men present and the way that women present. And men or boys tend to be more hyperactive in their activities, and men or women tend to be a little bit more hyperactive in their thinking and organization. And a lot of the executive functioning skills that we're going to be learning a lot more about today. So if you're here because you've been diagnosed or because you're curious about diagnosis and whether it applies to you, hopefully this will still be helpful for you either way. And I do have another training I'm doing, I believe next week or the week after, that's also going to talk a lot more in depth about some other interesting aspects of ADHD. So as a lawyer, why do you think executive function matters? High-performing professionals specifically struggle very, very silently, and I was one of those. We're really great at what we call masking and making sure that we're doing everything to the best of our abilities, because it almost tends to be a way to shield some of the vulnerabilities or the things that are going wrong or feeling chaotic in our lives. And so executive dysfunction is often at the root of that. I like to explain executive function as like your brain's CEO team, or I'm sorry, C-suite team. So there are 8 different members, which we're going to go over, and they all have to be really good at their jobs in order to make everything function in your brain and therefore your body appropriately. Your executive functioning is handled in your frontal lobe, and it's the key to improving productivity, all your decision-making, and just your overall well-being. Now, because I believe I'm new to the Q&A here, so I want to see if we can do like a raise of hands here of people who are here because they have recognized that they're struggling with ADHD in their work, or if they are here to, well, we're going to disregard that because I think that's a little bit too personal, but I am going to make this a very interactive option as we get into the executive functions moving forward. In the meantime, as we keep moving forward, I want to again remind you, as people are coming in, to use the link to the materials, because we're going to be following along and doing a worksheet together. And so there's a 3-page PDF that you'll have access to. The link to the materials is in the chat as well as in your email. So the difference between executive function, which is the little CEO suite in your brain, or the C-suite in your brain, and executive dysfunction is just as it sounds. Executive dysfunction is when some of those executives are not playing at the team level, and they tend to create like weaker links within them. So it could look like trouble with planning or focus, trouble with memory or task management. It's really important to note that executive function, it is not an indicator of your IQ or your motivation levels, which is something that we hear all the time about ADHD is, oh, they just lack motivation. There's just a procrastination issue. When in fact, so much of our motivation comes from these executive functions. And in ADHD specifically, because it's a neurodevelopmental disorder, typically we tend to be between 3 to 5 years behind in development in specifically these executive dysfunctional or these executive function areas. So it's not that we procrastinate, it's that we're not using the right tools to strengthen the right areas that create motivation. This will make more sense as we keep going. It's also important to note that executive dysfunction is not solely because of ADHD. There's a lot of reasons for executive dysfunction. It comes up very primarily in some of the symptoms of ADHD, like lack of focus, lack of motivation, et cetera. But it can also just come from being under levels of high stress or burnout, which is specifically what I specialize in, working with high achieving professionals. So, well, I guess what I was trying to get at earlier, trying to see if you're here for ADHD or because you have a diagnosis, is, are you here because you have a diagnosis, or should we be considering that you're just experiencing symptoms of burnout? And either way, this training will be really, really helpful to you. So executive dysfunction is unique in how it's going to impact lawyers, and that it may cause you to miss deadlines. Having had lawyer clients in the past, I see over-researching as an issue where you get so caught up in the research instead of the organization of the thoughts and the presenting of the case. This is not unique to lawyers. This happens to therapists also and other industries as well, but something that I've seen firsthand happening with my clients who have been lawyers in the past. Disorganized casework, difficulty switching between your clients and tasks when you have multiple clients with maybe somewhat different backgrounds, etc. We get into what we call hyperfocus with ADHD, where you want to stay in one area that feels really, really comfortable. So then switching to another client that maybe is less interesting becomes very difficult. And then emotional reactivity in high stakes environments. So I'm sure you can imagine that having emotional negativity during like presenting a case could be negatively impactful, though I think that it can also be positively impactful if you're a litigator in the right circumstances. But we want to manage it in a way that is best for us and not reactionary. Instead of responding, or responding with planning in the moment. Judith says, oh my God, over-researching for sure. Me too, Judith. Over-researching is a problem for me. All right, so let's go over our executive functions. We have 8 of them, as I mentioned. And again, I'm going to encourage you to pull up the worksheet so that you can follow along. This is in no particular order. There's no specific one that's more important than any of the others. So they all have their equal share of the pie here. We're going to start with impulse control and emotional control, working memory, planning and prioritizing, organization, task initiation, metacognition, and flexible thinking. Now we're going to go over each of these individually so that you understand exactly what each of them mean, exactly how they apply to your day-to-day operations. And I'm also going to be giving you tools to improve each of these things as well. So be sure to, like I said, follow along on the worksheet. But because the worksheet doesn't allow for notes for the tools that we're going to be going over, be sure that you also have a pencil and a paper with you. I always encourage that for clients whenever I'm doing any sort of training, because we know that writing things down is going to help you to integrate it and retain it in your brain up to 70% more. And it's not the same as typing and taking notes. We feel like we've gotten so efficient by learning how to use our notes on our computer, but our brain really retains information very differently when we're actually using handwriting. So feel free to get a pen and paper and follow along. And you're going to want to make a separate section for the tools in each of these areas, specifically when you notice that it's an area that you're struggling in. Make sure we're moving forward at the right place here. Okay. So this is the worksheet that we're going to start with. Page 1 of the 3-page sheet looks like this here. And for each of these sections, we're going to have you self-rate on a scale from 1 to 5 for each function. I encourage you not to use number 3 because I feel like it's really easy for us to just allow it to be average. And that doesn't challenge us to recognize if we do need to make some improvement or if it is a strength. And it's also so interesting in high achieving professionals that identifying our strengths tends to be one of our weaknesses. So let it be a win if it's going to be over 3. And if it's not, then just let it be a 2. And that feels a little bit more like a gut punch to high achievers, but that's okay. I want that feeling to be comfortable for you, instead of just letting it be, oh, this is just okay. So maybe you're going to have an emotional response one way or the other, that this is a strength or this is a weakness. And then we're going to, at the very end, kind of recap, and I'll assign you some homework to make sure that we're improving these tasks for a little bit longer, or for in effective ways that are going to retain this information and improve with compounding habits over time. So you're going to identify one strength at least and pick one weakness, but we'll do that at the very end. My slides are taking a moment. Oh, I think we both did it. All right, so we're going to start with impulse control. So our first example of impulse control is something like interrupting in court or client meetings. This is something that always stands out to me when I'm assessing somebody for ADHD, is they often have what I like to call a flight of thoughts, where especially if it's something that they're very interested in, they're going to be talking really rapidly and they don't intend to cut other people off in the conversation, but they just get so excited that they're going to jump in when they can. And there's also working memory, which we're going to talk about later, the fear that we may forget what we wanted to say. So we need to say it right there in the moment before we forget it, because we're so excited about it. So interrupting in court or client meetings can be a really easy indicator of impulse control, but there are lots of other things. So specifically when I work with like new business owners, I also see instances of maybe over-investing or impulse spending in something. And usually all of these things come when we are very excited about something. So kind of over-investing your time, your energy, your money, jumping quickly into relationships, jumping quickly into a client case that maybe would not have been ideal for you, but maybe felt interesting in the moment, or maybe felt difficult to say no to in the moment. So I'm going to have you guys, because you're a lot more informed on how this applies in law, give me some examples of what you think impulse control looks like specific to your profession. Go ahead and drop them in our Q&A. And I know there's usually a little bit of a delay as people are typing, but I encourage you to type, because I'll remind you, I'm a dual licensed therapist. So I'm totally comfortable sitting in an uncomfortable silence. And I want to make sure that everybody is paying attention and engaged in this, and doing this Q&A is a really helpful way to do that. Yes, exactly. Here we go. So agreeing to take on a matter too quickly without saying, great, let me evaluate this and get back to you. Especially in a moment of excitement, interrupting during conversations with clients or opposing parties, I would imagine that can get you into some trouble when you are in the courtroom. Oh, my rating was much different until you gave me examples of jumping into cases too quickly. Good, I'm glad. The more that we understand the complexities of each of these functions, the more of an honest self-assessment you can give yourself. Taking on way too much. That is 100% often the case that I'm seeing with my clients, is we say yes too quickly to things because of our excitement. We're going to talk a little bit about, I think, emotional mastery is next. But there is that at play too. So a couple of these factors all working together. Overreacting to texts, emails, etc. So Jack, I'm going to say instead of the overreacting, it's the quickly reacting without having time to assess whether you want to react that way outwardly or not, because the overreacting, again, will go into the emotional function that we're moving to next. When I have a question, instead of pausing and meeting with a superior, I make a decision because I want to move forward. And if it's wrong, extra time that could have been prevented. I like to say, as an ADHDer myself, that I take messy action, and that makes my weakness stability. So I have an executive assistant that I know I drive her crazy, because I'm like, we're just going to do it. If I think too much about it, then I won't do it. We won't ever get it done. And I think that she's like, we're going in a million different directions at the same time. So 100%, that was spot on. Agreeing to deadlines or estimates immediately before thinking them through, and then realizing, oh, I don't actually have enough time for that. We're going to talk about time management. So perfect. So I hope you guys are understanding how this applies specifically to you as legal professionals. Impulse control, and some ways to self-check that are, do I speak or act before thinking? So go ahead and give yourself the rating. And take note if this is something that is landing below your 3, that a really fun and silly way to practice your impulse control is by kind of practicing a mindfulness game. It's one that I play with my kids. And if you don't have kids, that's totally okay. But maybe ask a coworker to play it with you. I also tend to find that high performers like to be really competitive too. So it kind of creates that competitive edge for everybody to get better at this silly little game. So it's called cat, dog, meow, woof, which sounds simple enough, but the objective is when the opposing party says cat, you have to respond with barking like a dog. And when the opposing party says dog, you have to respond with meow. So this is going to override your impulse. We've been trained for years and decades at this point to know, obviously, a cat says meow and a dog says woof. But by having to actively switch that up, we're going to challenge ourselves to strengthen that impulse muscle in our brain instead of doing autopilot for certain things. Having that moment to pause and make the correct decision, which in this instance is the wrong decision, seemingly. So we're strengthening that impulse muscle. I hope that makes sense to everybody. If so, if not, just go ahead and leave a question and I'll come back to it. I also missed, instead of waiting for a response from another attorney or client, I'm too impatient and research for an hour, sometimes unsuccessfully, instead of just waiting for the answer, 100%. And then again, I think we're going to see some of our time blindness at play here. And this will all start to make sense to you why we tend to see ADHD as a motivation and or a lack of motivation, when really it's a lot of these functions coming hand in hand with each other at different strengths and weakness levels. All right, hopefully everybody has rated that impulse control, and we're moving on to emotional control. So a common trait of ADHD is what we call emotional dysregulation. And so some examples of it can be snapping at staff, really ruminating, probably increased levels of anxiety or over-worrying, over-functioning. But it's mostly the emotional response that we're having in the moment, or a lack of emotional response. So it can be that you're so disconnected from your emotions that you appear numb and underreactive in certain situations. But it's just the lack of emotional understanding and mindfulness within your body and the appropriate way to communicate that to others around you. So some examples would be if something goes awry in a court case, for example, and letting, you know, obviously saying something inappropriate at the wrong time, because your emotions have gotten the best of you, would be an example of emotional dysregulation. It also could apply. I see it a lot in high performers that have been so emotionally drained throughout the day that then by the time they go home to be with their partner or their children, they're a lot more snappy or completely numbed out to any emotion. And so the best way to check this is, how do my emotions show up in my day? Are they things that can typically derail my day? Am I having side conversations where people are pulling me aside and saying that I overreacted or underreacted in that moment, et cetera? So again, like we did last time, can you guys give me some examples of ways that you may see emotional control showing up in the legal profession, whether it's your traits or somebody else that you've seen around you? When I don't get the positive feedback I expect, wah, wah, 100%. So I'm interested, Judith, in then how that shows up for you. If you're feeling really negative, then it's going to derail your day and it may make you less motivated, kind of lethargic, kind of dragging, maybe harder to be around, right? So this is actually a great example for people to understand how these negatives can have this interplay with your work and your personal life as well. All right. So if we don't have any other examples, then go ahead and rate yourself. We have, my passionate discussions about cases are a turnoff to my family. I so relate to that. My husband tells me all the time, don't therapize him, or I'll just like dive into the neuroscience of certain like family interactions. And it's not always in the right sense, but it's more so when you're, when your emotions are being interfering with your personal life because of what's happening at work, or because you don't know how to identify that they're what's at the root. I've learned to not say the wrong thing, but I can keep my emotions off my face. Okay. Which likely has come from learning the hard way. It makes me less motivated and lethargic. I do recover with self-talk after a while if it's not extreme. All right, good. So our tool to overcome it, one more, responding to client or OCO, opposing counsel, email right away while I'm irritated. Yes, that is a great example. Never respond to emails when you're irritated or when you're emotionally frazzled from something going on. Emotion can 100% be too controlled, Patricia. So that's why I want you to see that this is it's like black and white thinking where you're either overly emotional or there can be a complete lack of emotion. And as lawyers, I would argue that having empathy and emotion is a great asset to your industry. And you can correct me if I'm wrong. So the more we tend to need to shut it down to protect ourselves, it would also, I would envision, impact you negatively as lawyers, depending on you know, how you practice or what your specialty is. I went a little all over, but Gretchen said that she runs her angry emails through ChatGPT, which is an amazing tool that I'm going to recommend to people. All right. So in order to overcome our emotional dysregulation, the key is to recognize our emotion at all. So a lot of times when we're either overly emotional or completely shut down from emotion, it's because we've never been taught to identify the emotion and how it's supposed to feel in our body. So our emotions are really important tools to help us to understand what our internal is trying to get out to the external. So when we're feeling angry, it's our brain and our body letting us know that there has been injustice. And so there needs to be some sort of a response activated. When we're feeling anxious or scared, in the traditional sense of the word, it's because we need to motivate our physical senses in order to either run or fight. So it's important to have emotions, but when we get out of the habit of identifying or recognizing those emotions and simply acting on them or shutting them down, that's when it becomes a problem. And that's when we're in emotional dysregulation. I recommend a tool called an emotion wheel. And I should have put one in here, but I was worried about timing. So you can just Google emotion wheel and there are amazing emotion wheels. It's a very colorful wheel. I'm sure I have one right here, actually. And it can be great to have on your desktop. And it's literally, we've identified that we have approximately 250 plus emotions. The more specific you can get in naming your emotion before responding, however you're feeling in the instant, is going to help you to respond appropriately to the emotion instead of stuffing it or responding overreactively. So notice it, name it with your emotion wheel or another tool, or just by like, think of the core basic emotions of maybe Inside Out, the movie, just anger, disgust, sad, happy, surprised, bad, and fearful are our most core emotions. And then you can nurture it, which is respond appropriately in the moment. So if you were at a 2 or below, that is your tool. I highly recommend you just Google a emotion wheel. All right, moving on to flexible thinking. So flexible thinking is our ability to adapt as necessary in the moment. So when things go astray, which happens all the time in life and in the legal profession, being able to be open to new ways of doing it or a different route. The opposite of flexible thinking is inflexible thinking. And so it's oftentimes where you're like, no, but this is what we had planned. I don't understand why we would ever derail from the plan. It's a lack of gray thinking and a lot more black and white thinking. So give me some examples that are specific to the legal profession for you about where flexible or inflexible thinking may be coming into you your day to day. Judith says this is her 5. It's mine too. I'm a military brat. I feel like I can adjust to any situation at any time, all the time. This is also why I like to do this interactively like this, because Something that applies to me may not resonate for you at all, but the more you guys can understand from your group of peers how it shows up, then you're like, oh, I didn't think that this applied to me, but now that I see it from other lawyers' perspectives, this makes total sense for me as being something that I struggle with or one of my strengths. So in a mediation, the need to be able to see the other side, even if I disagree, imagining another point of view to see what is coming. Yes, 100%. So to be able to prepare, you have to understand even something that maybe you disagree with. Sticking too much to your, okay, yes, I haven't even gotten through this and I think this is awesome. Sticking too much to your outline when a deposition goes in a different direction. It's important to listen and ask follow-up questions when the witness says something unexpected. That is spot on. I want to use that as an example in all of my trainings moving forward about flexible thinking and just executive functions. Last minute deals to draft or negotiate. I can do it, but I hate it. Yes. So just recognizing that inability to adapt or suddenly shift paths is maybe a struggle for you, but as with all of these, if it feels like a weakness, it also doesn't have to be that way forever. And that's why we're addressing these tools to use and to practice regularly, because I also didn't say this at the beginning and I wish I would have, but like ADHD is not, it's a neurotype and it has strengths and weaknesses just like any other neurotype, which is just basically the way that your brain is designed. We all have unique characteristics. We all have strengths and weaknesses. And just because you have a certain baseline, once you have receive a diagnosis or even start to recognize that maybe ADHD explains a lot of your behaviors, that doesn't mean that this is the way that you'll be forever. Your baseline is an important measure of starting out so that you can know where to strengthen and where to lean in a little bit more. And so, yes, just because you hate something now doesn't mean that you can't learn to love it or be really, really good at it, regardless of diagnosis. I literally changed my entire study process in the middle of studying for the bar exam because the initial process wasn't working for me. Amazing. It was the right move to be able to pivot after recognizing there was a better way. This is a great way of highlighting it as a strength. And so I would assume the same would happen if you're going about a case a certain way and then realize like this case is just not going the way that we need it to. We need to be flexible to going a completely different direction if we're going to be successful. And not having that could lead to the loss of that case. Great example. Part of the dopamine seeking excitement to think on my feet rather than following a script. Yes, 100%. It can be dopamine seeking. And so this also can be problematic when it leads into impulse control, right? Where your flexible thinking becomes so flexible that now you're being impulsive. So again, these all go hand in hand. And I love that you guys are starting to see that. So the tool to overcome this inflexible thinking is challenging yourself to find the gray. So a lot of times when somebody is an inflexible thinker, they're very black and white thinkers. It needs to either be all this direction and this is all bad. As lawyers, you know, we can't think in terms of good or bad, but that inflexible thinking can still creep up in other ways. And so the challenge is always like, if this is the direction that I wanted and this is what I don't want to be doing, where is the happy medium in the middle that I can be comfortable with moving forward? And this happens not only with like big challenges, but even in your small day-to-day decisions, whether it's like, and so maybe you struggle with decision fatigue. And I was going to say, if it's, you're sitting at a, like a drive-through and can't decide between two things, that can also be, or you get to the drive-through and you want to order chicken nuggets and they're out of chicken nuggets and then you panic. And so that inflexible thinking is, no, that's all I wanted was the chicken nuggets, the finding the gray and being like, okay, maybe I'll settle for a chicken sandwich and take the bun off, is the adaptability to overcome this inflexible thinking. All right, moving forward. Working memory. So working memory is different from your long-term memory and your short-term memory. Working memory is actually the memory that you use to go from task to task. So I like to think of it as your brain's windows, and you toggle between windows. And then your working memory is, can I remember what is on one window when I switch tasks to the next window? An example of poor working memory would be forgetting case details or client preferences, forgetting phone numbers. Like if you're going, literally, if you're toggling from screen to screen and you're trying to enter, I don't know, like a case number in one document from another document, and you have to keep going back and forth because you can't just memorize the number, that is your working memory. So give me some other examples of working memory in the legal field, guys, because you guys are doing great with this. And a great way to self-check for yourself is, do I lose track easily? But let's see what else is here. Yeah, working memory is deadlines, whether you're staying on deadline or not. Making sure that all of your tasks, and we're going to get into planning and prioritizing, make sure that all of your tasks that you're remembering this working memory, or I'm sorry, these deadlines, to then apply these other skill sets. Oh, statute of limitations, remembering statute of limitations. Yes. And so especially in the legal system, there's a lot of really fine details that you guys have to be keeping or in, keeping in consideration as you're doing your work. Tracking time for billing, 100%. If you're not remembering to bill your hours for that day, you're going to learn the hard way. you know, that becomes real problematic when you're trying to then a week later bill those hours and remember what you're supposed to be doing. If it's not written down in my calendar or task list, it does not exist. 100%. Me too. Working memory is one of my greatest weaknesses. And I live by that exact same tool, is it has to be written down somewhere for me and a visual reminder. I also have alarms that go off all the time to let me know to stay on task and remind me where I'm supposed to be. Just remembering case name or statute when I only change tabs. Yep, exactly. Tracking time. Billing is my lowest skill set. Billing. Okay, so everybody's recognizing how this applies to each of you. Perfect. Be sure that you go ahead and self-assess yourself. Do you lose track easily of the task that you're doing, or specific small details of the task, the time allotted for it, etc.? If this is something that you are struggling with, I have another fun, silly game for you. Let me see if I can do this in reverse here. So you're going to scan the room, looking from your right to your left, and just say 5 different objects out loud. And the goal of the game is to remember those 5 different objects. And you're supposed to say them at random. So if I do this in reverse, I'm going to say elephant, flag, trophy, book, printer. So elephant, flag, trophy, book, printer. Candidly, that was embarrassingly hard for me to say because I almost said flower. And then I was like, wait, did I say flower out loud? I need to say flower. And then to make the game harder, you just add more objects. And again, this is something that you can do, I don't know, between clients. Make it a challenge for yourself. Start documenting how many you're tracking short term in these little snippets of this game. Another tool that somebody else has already mentioned is using calendars and also daily audio logs. So if I have a thought that comes up and I'm like, oh my gosh, don't forget this, I use my voice memo for everything. I even send myself text messages too, to make sure that I get it a little bit later. All right, are we ready to move on? Let's get to self-monitoring. I don't know if I'm moving these or if you are, but okay, I am now. Okay, perfect. There's like a weird delay. Self-monitoring, which is so interesting, and maybe we should have started with this, but typically people with ADHD struggle with self-awareness. And so even recognizing that your self-assessment for all of the other tools that we've gone through so far are not completely accurate because we tend to have less self-awareness than we think that we do. So an example is overlooking our mistakes or our tone. And tone is one that I see happen a lot, especially with people with ADHD, because they tend to be really emotionally driven and passionate. And sometimes that tone can come in a little bit harsher than they hope. Or I always have to tell my ADHD clients that honesty without tact can be cruelty. And so when we're trying to get a point across because we think it's important, sometimes we don't recognize how harshly it's coming off to the other person. So that's an example of self-monitoring, but it can also be a physical thing where you're not able to self-assess maybe your physicality as you go into a fitness class and you go in really, really strong. And then halfway through realize I'm actually not as good at this as I thought I was going to be. There's a lot of different ways that this self-monitoring comes into play. So let me know what you think of when in the legal profession, when considering self-monitoring, which is essentially kind of a lack of self-awareness that can be troublesome to you. Yeah, even just the expression on your face. I tell my clients a lot, you've got to fix your face. I see couples and I'll be like, no, dude, you have to fix your face. You're not saying what, you're not conveying what I know that you're trying to say. Because you're not paying attention to the minor details or even your body language, right? Something that I'm sure you guys have to coach clients on all the time. Your body language can also give you away. And if we're not paying attention to all of these little details, because small details are not an ADHDer's primary focus or exciting dopamine releasing area, it's all of the other things. Small details like our personal tone or body language feel frivolous or unimportant. Any others? I'll wait for a couple of more. Okay, so tone. Everybody's relating to tone. I feel I'm self-aware, except when it comes to tone. People will tell me I come on aggressive when I feel I was trying to express passion, which is so common in an ADHDer. And I would also argue it's less socially acceptable for women than it is for men, just because of social constructs and how women are supposed to present themselves. The legal profession is probably a place where it's really okay for a woman to be very passionate and a quote unquote aggressive, but everything in its time and place, right? I feel like I was just trying to express my passion for what I was discussing. All right, perfect. So go ahead and self-assess your ability to self-assess and be as honest as you can, giving yourself either a 2 or below or a 4 or above. And then your tool, I don't usually like to recommend journaling, but this is the best way to really self-reflect is a few journal prompts to help you to kind of dive into how honest am I being with myself? How aware of my own downfalls am I truly? Or even how overly critical of my downfalls am I, which often is the case too with high performers. So I would journal on some of the feedback that maybe you're getting from clients or do you guys have superiors? I would assume you still have superiors or partners or coworkers, et cetera, and how you would apply them. Even identifying your strengths and weaknesses is a great way of self-monitoring. So if you journal on a list of strengths and weaknesses that you noticed in the day before, that's a great way to start paying attention to some of the patterns, paying attention to things that triggered you throughout the day, and how you responded to those triggers are also great ways of measuring your self-monitoring. Okay, Jennifer says, I'm working on a PhD and my dissertation topic is work-life balance for female attorneys. There's a study I came across that found female attorneys' US Supreme Court arguments were received more positively if they were more feminine in tone and demeanor. Oh my gosh, that's a whole other training that I could get into with you, Jennifer, but thank you so much for sharing that. That's amazing. All right, moving on. Do we have any questions about our tools or any of our functions so far? Can I have you help me progress the slide? I don't know why it's not working. Thank you. All right, planning and prioritizing. A classic ADHD trait is a lack of organization and planning and prioritizing. So really this comes more to the time management than anything else. So do an example of a lack of planning or prioritizing that is really, really common is doing the low impact work first. Doing all of the little easy things throughout your day to feel more productive instead of considering what needs to be done, what is needs to be done in a timely manner, what is more important to be done, et cetera. And so with my clients, this typically shows up as I have an email inbox of zero. Meanwhile, I have a case that I haven't done my final arguments for, and it's going to be this afternoon, and I haven't billed in a week, et cetera. So trying, and especially with ADHD, you tend to be doing the dopamine seeking, easy tasks to get that quick hit of dopamine instead of the really important tasks that are maybe more boring, like billing, but you get you paid. So they're definitely a priority, right? So to self-check this one, do I struggle to prioritize? And again, consider your time management in this. Am I getting to deadlines and noticing how far behind I am? Am I chunking up my work effectively so that I'm working steadily towards a really, really big task or waiting until the last minute to accomplish it? Very ADHD of you. I need a physical system of how to see my case's progress and deadlines, and I don't have one. Well, there you go. That is very great self-awareness. Maybe some of your peers can recommend somebody or something if you guys have something. I'm gonna have to consider if there's something out there too. But go ahead and give me some examples in the legal profession for how planning and prioritization can bite you in the butt as a lawyer. All right, I'm going to wait another minute or so. Yeah, missing deadlines for sure. Missing maybe appointments or being late for appointments would be another one. Putting off deadlines until the last moment. Okay. I'm just going to take it when you guys don't have a ton of answers that I already fully explained it to make sense for you. So, if you have self-assessed yourself and this is something that you struggle with, and you receive either a two or a one in this area, the tool that you're going to want to do is, like Jennifer said, maybe having a tool or a system in place to kind of keep track of things visually. This is totally off topic, but I also heard that like ADHDers, we see our time as like it exists right now and like the like moving forward from us instead of horizontally. So we see time vertically. Is that right? Anyways, so yes, if you're struggling with time, you want to create as many systems as you can to organize your time. This again comes into the calendars that we were talking about earlier. A tool that I swear by is called brain dumping. And so, first thing in the morning, when my brain is going a million miles a minute and I can think of 9 million things that I need to do, and I'm so worried that I'm going to forget one of the important things, I write everything down, no matter how minute or stupid or silly it feels. Like, if it's like, don't forget to pick up your kids from school, or don't forget to shower, like, get everything on there, including the research or all of the other things that I need to do throughout my day. And then I'll go through and organize it or circle the things that I have decided of the 100 things, okay, my day will feel successful if I accomplish these three things because they're timely. They're what's going to be moving my needle forward in my big long-term goal, whether that's a specific case or a certain client, et cetera. And there are things that I just need to do. Like I cannot forget to pick up my kids from school, right? So you're going to circle between three to five things. And then only once you've crossed off those three things, can you start incorporating some of the silly things like checking social media or posting content or, any of the other things, because it's also a very dopamine releasing task to, check off things off your to-do list. So it's really easy for us to prioritize the wrong things to hit those check marks. I tend to do more time-consuming tasks first, afraid of burning out on the easy ones before I get to the difficult one. Yes, waiting until the last minute to finish something big, and I should have done something small. All right, speaking of time, let's chug along here. I just realized we still have just two more of our functions to cover. So hopefully you've assessed that, and we will go ahead and will you progress my slide, please? Joy says, I heard saying remember to rather than don't forget helps you remember because it's a positive rather than a negative. That is a very good point. And yep, another training though, but that's an awesome tool. So task initiation, again, very linked to what we were just talking about. Which again is often described as just a lack of motivation when instead we're driven to do tasks that feel good instead of tasks that feel boring or that will take a lot more energy. So example, putting off briefs or billing. So initiating the tasks that feel harder or less dopamine releasing. But give me some more examples for task initiation that you guys struggle with. And remember that a lot of these are interlinked with some of the other things that we've gone over. Forgetting to outline my goals of the task and getting lost in minute details. Yes, 100%. I don't know if any of you here, do you guys call it private practice in the legal profession? I think like if you have your own firm, but that's something that I struggle with too, is making sure that I don't get lost in all of the details of all of the things I'm considering doing because you're your own marketer, your own biller, your own salesperson, and you can get so caught in the inner workings of one of those areas that you forget to move along the big picture because the big picture takes a lot of specific organized skill sets to move. Trying to prioritize when I have 30 things to do, having a difficult conversation, 100%, that is actually spot on. Having the conversations you don't want to have and then putting it off forever. I put off billing and have difficulty getting started when it's not urgent. We're going to do in my next training next week, we're going to do a tool to help you understand how to overcome that sense or that need for the sense of urgency or that feeling of lack of motivation. Blocking time on my calendar to get things done, but not using that time to take the tasks to set for that time. 100%. That's totally something I see all the time as well. Allowing client intakes to impact deadlines. Yes. So not, I think that would fall more under planning and prioritizing. Task initiation is kind of avoiding it unless you're avoiding the deadline. That makes sense. So a tool to overcome this task initiation, it's so silly. It feels ridiculous to say out loud, but it's called body doubling. You've probably seen it on TikTok and other social media. Literally, if you have a task in front of you and you have other people watching you, because ADHDers are so used to being criticized for not being on task, we tend to perform so much better when somebody knows what our objective is, and then we struggle to like goof around basically. And so even within my program, I do online co-working sessions and it's body doubling. Everybody says what their objective is for that allotted time. And then at the end, even though we're all just on our computer screens doing work and really not paying attention to each other, the sense of being perceived as not being efficient or on task keeps us on task. So You may notice this, like doing laundry. If you notice, like you ask your partner to just be in the room or you turn on the TV, it helps you to initiate the task a little bit better. All right. Next one, and I think this is our last one, is organization. So an example would be a cluttered workspace, losing your notes, chaotic calendar. If you're organizing files on your computer or don't have a good organization system of files on your computer, this would be a lack of organization. I'm definitely not saying that from personal experience at all. I'm kidding. You don't want to see my files. My organization system is chaos. But I think a typical ADHDer likes to say organized chaos. We know where everything is. It just doesn't look pretty. And so a typical ADHD home or office may look like just lots of piles, but we know exactly what is in those piles, right? At the end of the day, it is not always the most efficient way to manage our thoughts or our notes or our important documents. So your self-check is, do I waste time searching for valuable information? Do I lose my keys and make myself work late to work or appointments? Do I lose the remote and then get frustrated because I can't turn on my show and wind down at the end of the day? Cluttered space. My need to see everything means I have piles of paper spread out all over my desk at all times. Yeah, because we create these coping tools to overcome some of our symptoms of ADHD. So our lack of task initiation is then compromised with our lack of organization by like saying, okay, but if this lives on my counter and I see it, then I'll remember to do the thing. In the meantime, it's creating that clutter. Make sense? So your tool is the one touch rule. And this is something that infuriates my client. But if you apply, and I would do this in small increments. So I would only give yourself 10 minutes to start with because it's going to frustrate you if you have an ADHD brain that wants to just accomplish the task. If you open an email or as soon as you touch something, you can only touch it once. So if you're in your email, you cannot just read the email and left it unread or left it unresponded to or unfiled where it needs to go. Once you read the email, you're only allowed to touch it once, so it has to go in the correct place. The same thing for if you're organizing your workspace. Once you touch something, it needs to be organized and put where it needs to go or have a space created for it and things like it moving forward. And like I said, I would do this in a 10-minute increment to start decluttering some of your area or your thoughts or your calendar or your email or your files, and then add to it as needed if you find that this is something that you struggle with. All right. So we've gone through all of our executive functions. And now I want you to look at the second page of your worksheet and essentially plot your dots based on where you rated them. So if you rated them at a one, then they would go on the tiniest inner circle of that pie piece, a two, the second circle, etc. The three, the four, the five. And you should have a dot in the center of each of the pie sections. And we're going to connect them in just a moment. How do we do the 10-minute rule along with priorities? I don't think I understand, Pamela. I'll come back to that. So everybody go ahead and you're connecting your dots. And what we're essentially creating is a wheel. I don't know if anybody's ever done a wheel of life activity, but this is our wheel of executive function. And the premise behind understanding the wheel of these skill sets is a wheel needs to be round in order to roll, right? It doesn't have to be perfect. You don't have to have all five for your wheel to roll efficiently. You can have all ones for your wheel to roll efficiently. Your wheel is going to run more efficiently at all ones than it is if you've got one and five and then three and then one and then five. So you're essentially assessing how bumpy your ride is or how distracting your ADHD or executive dysfunction is to your life by how inconsistent that wheel is. So once you've connected those wheels, and I don't have an example for you, I'm sorry, but just consider, is this going to be a really, really bumpy ride? And what is the one area that I can focus my and use my tools on to make this a less bumpy ride moving forward? Because we struggle with prioritizing, and you're going to want to do all of them. And also, we're all high achievers, so we want everything to be perfect. And perfection is not the goal here, but smoothness of the ride is. So just choose one of your weaknesses to prioritize your focus on and work and create some habits around moving forward until you're able to slowly strengthen that. And then you can always come back and reassess and consider a new weakness. And I also want you to consider what your strengths are. Maybe you didn't realize, especially when we get a diagnosis of ADHD, it becomes really easy to be like, I'm frazzled, chaotic, I'm overly emotional, and I can't get things done, I'm always late. Like, it's really easy to fall into that negative talk. But I want you to identify your strengths. You undoubtedly have some strengths that you were able to recognize here. And I want you to be able to claim that and say, this also comes from my ADHD. I'm really great at having impulse control, for example, or flexible thinking. And I want you to kind of claim that and let that be yours. So you're going to choose your one area of focus for at least the next 2 weeks. So I recommend up to 30 days. And in order to do this, I recommend habit stacking. So if you've ever read James Clear's Atomic Habits, it's one of my favorites, but he allows you to understand that habits are more effective when they're smaller and when they are automated. So if you are going to be practicing one of our new tools, consider something that you're already doing every single day. So say you come in every single day and you check your email first thing in the morning. That's a good time to be like, as soon as I check my email, I also play the woof, the cat dog woof meow game with the other person in my office. Or as I'm driving home, I do that with my kids, or find a way that you're going to commit to it consistently because it's tacked onto something you're already doing daily. Because your small, consistent changes are always going to be more impactful than the attempt at a big overhaul, which so many of us try to do and then fail and then tell ourselves that we're not good at making change. So I went a little bit over time, but I am open to questions, and I do have a couple of opportunities for you all. Thank you so much for spending so much time with me today and being so interactive, which is not always the case on these virtual events. So thank you. I'm going to come back and read your questions here in just a moment, but I wanted to give you the opportunity to know that I have a course that I offer online. I typically charge $99 for it. And this is whether you have ADHD or you've been diagnosed, or like I said, if you're ADHD curious and you're not certain, this is just a really great tool to help you to understand ADHD in what I consider a very different light. The way that I teach it is the therapist specifically for high performers, understanding dopamine, understanding multitasking, and really how to use your ADHD to your best advantage. And also a lot of symptoms or character traits that people don't recognize are ADHD and can be really beneficial to you once you understand that this is a trait from ADHD. And then I also give you some of my favorite tools to make your ADHD more efficient throughout your day to day, especially in the legal profession or just in high performing professions. And so you can purchase that with the QR code there. I have you guys discounted to a rate of $24 because I know that you're already trying to do your CEs and all of the other things required of licensure. So this is just a quick and easy training in under an hour for you to better understand your brains. And then if we progress to the next slide, I also offer one-on-one coaching. There it goes. Oops, not that one. Sorry. We both keep clicking it. I offer one-on-one coaching in 6-month packages. So for those well, all of my clients are usually like, that's a lot of time for me to commit to, or I haven't really enjoyed the therapy process because I feel like I'm putting in so much time and we're just like venting. They're not ever giving me any strategic tools. And so I operate very, very differently. I only offer coaching, and it's very much in a kind of like no BS, call you on your stuff type of way, help you to recognize the patterns that are not being effective for you. I'm also trained in EMDR to help you understand some of the things that are getting in your way. I work with primarily ADHD professionals because entrepreneurs are shown to be 300% more likely to have ADHD. So the majority of my clients are business owners with ADHD. And so we can recognize some of the things that are not working for you and give you tangible tools to help overcome it. And there is a QR code there also to initiate your first step, which is just booking a complimentary consultation call with me to kind of go over what your goals might be and what the structure of my training looks like. Okay. So how do we do the 10-minute rule along with priorities? Meaning there's so much that comes. If I spend my time organizing items, I'll never actually do the work. Very good, Pamela. So that's a great time for you to initiate body doubling, making sure that somebody else is keeping you on task to stop organizing and start doing. And so just allow somebody to hold you accountable to doing that, to doing the actual task. Any other questions? I was seeing some open and then get answered. But if there are no other questions, then that, oh yes, put the first QR code back on the screen, please. You guys have been amazing. Thank you. Oh, thank you so much. I hope that this makes sense for all of you and you can see how these are not problems that you have with ADHD. These are just starting off points for you to understand how to better harness your unique brain. So thank you guys so much for being so interactive and participatory. Yeah, I love how many of you guys there are here. Thank you so much for all attending.